Welcome to What the Health Podcast, where we help you lead a happier and healthier life by offering a wide range of health and wellness news and insights. I'm John Salak, your host. If you like what you hear, be sure to visit our news site at wellwellusa.com and sign up for our weekly news blasts. Now, let's get started with the show. You know, the worst kind of physical challenges are the ones that can't be seen until it's too late and they start causing problems. There are lots of these hidden dangers out there, but perhaps one of the most prevalent is osteoporosis, which is a disease that causes bone mass to start deteriorating faster than it is rebuilt. Ultimately, this leads to weak bones, which in turn increases the risks of fractures. Now, osteoporosis is most often associated with mature adults, which can lead to highly risky bone breaks and injuries. But the truth is that it isn't just limited to older adults. Lifestyle and diet issues are increasingly putting younger adults at risk as well. Thankfully, there are ways to promote bone health at every age, but this takes a fair amount of personal commitment, whether you're 30 or 70. It also takes a commitment on the part of medical professionals to thoroughly check those at risk and adequately diagnose any lurking problems. But how can we effectively promote bone health? Thankfully, we've lined up a leader in the field who is ready to break down the best ways to battle against osteoporosis and get people back on their feet safely and securely. So keep listening. So welcome to what we always call the most important part of our What the Health podcast. When we interview someone of note, but someone also important in terms of helping us all lead healthier and better lives. And in this case, we're talking to Dr. Doug Lucas, who is a specialist in many things, but primarily focuses on healthy aging and bone health. He's also the founder of Optimal Human Health, which is a practice which specializes in these areas. And in addition to that, has the Dr. Doug Show on YouTube, which is a podcast. So, Dr. Lucas, welcome to What the Health.
Thanks, John. Really happy to be here.
Okay. And today we're going to focus on an area that people read a lot about, hear a lot about, affects millions of people. But I think it's one of those areas where people hear about it, they're really not 100% sure what they're dealing with. And that's osteoporosis, which deals with bone health. So we want to start out with the obvious is what exactly is osteoporosis? Does it come in a single form? Are there variations? What are we dealing with when we talk about this as it relates to bone health?
Great question. So I'd love to kind of reframe osteoporosis because when people hear the term, generally they're thinking about this thing called DEXA or the imaging modality that tells them whether or not they may or may not have osteoporosis. And that's really not what it is. So yeah, there's a way to diagnose it, but really osteoporosis is essentially just a bone metabolism problem, meaning that you're losing more bone than you're growing or you're building over a long enough period of time where you lose enough bone density, enough bone strength, enough bone matrix that it puts you at increased risk of fracture. So the whole DEXA T-score thing is kind of a whole separate conversation around diagnosis and prognosis, but really osteoporosis is a bone metabolism problem. Does that make sense?
It makes sense. When you talk about bone metabolism, we're talking about bone loss. Is that the way to equate metabolism?
Correct. In some ways, that's the end effect that results in osteoporosis, but your bone is always turning over. So different ways to look at the statistics. Some people would say that you are replacing your bone every 10 years in your human body. So the body is breaking down and building a new skeleton every decade. That's, again, variable. But that's kind of the idea that we're always building up and breaking down bone. But osteoporosis is the result of breaking down more than you're building up over long enough to become in this sort of pathologic state.
And pretty obvious that mature adults tend to face this risk more often than younger people. But in general, is the number of people affected by osteoporosis growing? And if so, why? Short of the fact we're an aging population.
Yeah, that is also true. There's a couple of different ways to look at this. So you're correct in that we generally don't worry about osteoporosis until we start talking about a quote unquote older population. But that number, that specific age, is becoming a moving target because of our population. So we have an aging population, but we have a subsection of the population that's aging very gracefully. And then we have some individuals who are not aging very gracefully, which unfortunately is the majority of the population. So if you go back a couple of decades, we used to talk about 65 and 70 being the screening age for women and men respectively. Now we are taking a whole another look at that and saying, honestly, we're seeing individuals who are in their 40s, 30s, and 20s that already have osteoporosis. So to some extent, really, we should be monitoring this issue really going into early adulthood when peak bone mass occurs. We're not going to see it as often, but there are so many risk factors for osteoporosis that the majority of the population is exposed to at least one or two of them, that really we're going to see it more and more. So this is a problem that is increasing in diagnosis. So the number of people that have it is going up, but the number of people actually being diagnosed is going down, if that makes sense. And that's because we're not screening for it. So there's just more people that have it that don't know.
That's fascinating. Why would we not be screening enough or diagnosing enough of these cases? Or how is that being missed? That's fascinating that it would be missed as the awareness seems to be growing. If not.
I think it's missed for two main reasons. One is that it's just not on most people's radar. We talk about cardiovascular health. We talk about dying from a heart attack, screening for cancer. We're checking all these boxes to make sure that we're doing the things to prevent the usual causes of death. And so osteoporosis kind of gets overlooked. The other reason why screening is going down is that in the past, we've relied on primary care doctors and systems that get reimbursed for performing DEXA scans as a revenue stream for a practice. The cost of the machines has continued to go up. The cost of the reimbursement has gone down. And so now it no longer makes fiscal sense for a primary care doctor or even a small system to pay for a DEXA scanner that they're going to end up losing money on. And so, I mean, you hate to say it, but it's driven by finances where it doesn't make financial sense to screen people for osteoporosis. And so this is something that needs to be addressed at the top level of our healthcare system. But when we talk about why we're missing this, I think it's because we don't talk about osteoporosis enough. And that's why I'm out here as often as I can be on podcasts, on stages, on my own channel. Because when you look at the top 3 to 4 causes of death in the United States of adults, unintentional injuries is usually number 3 or 4. And as we age, falls and osteoporotic fragility fractures are the primary cause of unintentional injuries. So it really is a top 3 or 4 cause of death for adults as we age. And yet we really don't hear much conversation around it.
And I want to go back to the whole aspect of not screening as regularly as we did. And I understand the economics, and economics plays a factor into everything. It seems to me that primary care physicians or systems would be screening these target individuals, mature adults, 55, 60, 70, and older. And I understand why people might think, oh, I'm 20 years old. I'm not going to have any bone issues. But are we not screening those mature adults as often as we have been in the past as well?
So a little bit of both. There was a recent study that was just published, I think, in the last couple of months, and it was kind of a narrative on how bad of a job we're doing as a system in the U.S. on diagnosing and then treating patients with osteoporosis. And I did some videos on this a couple of weeks ago. But essentially, what they did is they looked at all the people that had fragility fractures. So there's a specific definition around those types of fractures. And of those people that had the fragility fracture, which is by definition from osteoporosis, how many of them carried the diagnosis at the time of the injury? And it was less than 20%, meaning less than 20% of the individuals that had an osteoporotic fracture had a diagnosis of osteoporosis. And then to make matters even worse, less than 20%, and even in some situations, less than 10% of the people that had a fragility fracture went on to receive a pharmacologic treatment, which they were clearly a candidate for in the traditional medical model, not how I treat it, but in the traditional medical model, they should have been offered a treatment, and less than 10% in some scenarios were actually offered a treatment for their osteoporosis. So we're just not doing a good job of diagnosing it or treating it. Again, it just sort of is like something that just comes into the office and patients walk away and they're like, oh, they said to do something about that thing and I forgot what it was and, oh, well, moving on.
Oh, it's frightening and fascinating at the same time. Do we know how many people are diagnosed with osteoporosis? And then given the fact our diagnosis system seems lousy, what you're telling us, how many people may potentially be walking around with a problem and not realize it?
Yeah, the statistics would say that about 10 million American adults have osteoporosis. It's hard to know how many actually have osteopenia, so that would be sort of like the runner-up to osteoporosis on a bone density scale. I would argue it's probably double, triple, or more that, because again, we're doing a terrible job of screening for it. So how could we possibly know?
Right. So we're talking potentially 10% of the population. And I know we're guessing here, but given what you're seeing on the front line, possibly 10% of the population dealing with this disease in some way or another, and maybe more. What's causing it? And why are younger people seem to be getting the problem more readily than they might have?
There's two main factors behind this. So one is, are we achieving our peak bone mineral density in the first place? And let me just take a second to explain that. So as we grow through adolescence and early adulthood, our skeleton is a lot of, if you look at babies, they're so pliable. And if you look at an x-ray of a baby for whatever reason, it's mostly cartilage, right? And so as we grow, our bones lengthen, our bones solidify, they ossify, and then they become solid and all the growth plates close and all that stuff. There is a peak bone mass that occurs in early adulthood that we really have to work hard to achieve throughout our adolescence and early adulthood. And as we get a more sedentary population, more people spending time in front of screens, and this includes kids in school, this includes people doing less athletic endeavors, less activities in their recreational time that is athletic and more sedentary, we're not doing the things that we need to do to achieve that peak bone mass. Additionally, if you've seen kids' diets lately, kids' diets are terrible. And so we get kids that are eating a highly processed food diet. They're not getting adequate protein. They're not building muscle. They're not getting the nutrients they need. So you add those two things together and they don't have peak bone mass. It's terrible. And so I think if we were to screen globally, which will never happen, but let's pretend that you screened all of the adults in their 20s to 30s in the United States, I think we would see a large percentage of people that are set up for osteoporosis. Either they have it now or they're going to have it in the near future. Because when you get to the second side of that equation, which is how quickly are you losing bone from your peak bone mass? So let's say that you did achieve peak bone mass. Congratulations. Now you have a long runway. You can lose bone gradually as you age and hopefully not achieve osteoporosis. But the rate of loss is going to be increased with variable factors, whether it be exposures, toxins, poor diet, gut dysfunction, all the potential things that can expose you to more rapid bone loss. And that is so rampant because it includes, again, all the things I just mentioned, but also hormone abnormalities, low testosterone in men, oral birth control in women, stress, particularly in women, which we know is a big deal right now. So all of those potential lifestyle factors, as well as other additional exposures, can increase your risk of and rate of bone loss. And so again, maybe you had good peak bone density, but now you're losing it at a rate much higher than you would anticipate, which is usually around 0.5 to 1% per year, but we see it clearly 3%, 5% per year, and you're going to become osteoporotic very fast.
It's often reported that women are more susceptible to osteoporosis than men. You kind of touched a little bit on that just now. Is that true?
So women are more likely to develop osteoporosis because they're going to have a lower peak bone mineral density to begin with. And so when we look at the statistics behind the T-score, and I don't want to bore your audience, but when we look at some of the statistics, it is adjusted for both sex and race. But still, you're going to find that Asian women, Caucasian women, if you look at the statistical average, will fall into osteoporosis during the normal lifespan of a human. So statistically, they are likely to develop osteoporosis. Whereas if you look at, say, like an African-American male, they could follow their normal statistical curve and live to 130 and never develop osteoporosis. So there is a difference for women versus men. I think the reason why women are going to be more likely to is because, again, their bone mineral density is starting lower, even though they try to adjust for that. But they're more likely to lose it more quickly because of the clear hormone change that occurs around menopause. So whereas men will lose testosterone gradually as they age, women lose estrogen and progesterone as if it falls off a cliff around menopause. And so that provokes a very rapid bone loss situation if we don't replace those hormones, which is a whole other conversation. But also women are, I think, are more sensitive to some of the societal and cultural things that are going on in our modern world, which is that some of the hormones, particularly testosterone in women, is made primarily in the adrenal glands. The adrenal glands are where we make our stress hormones. So I see adrenal dysfunction globally in women, especially in the perimenopause and menopause years, because of all the things that women are expected to do in our society. Not only are women doing a lot of the traditional roles that women did in the previous generations, but now they're also having careers, they're taking care of their kids, they're taking care of their parents, and all of that stuff adds up. And they're now not only going to see the hormone changes that go along with perimenopause and menopause, but they're going to see the stress that's going to negatively impact their testosterone as well. Whereas men, we see that, we're exposed to that as well, but we don't have that same negative impact, at least from an osteoporosis perspective. Women are also going to be exposed to other pharmaceuticals. They've been exposed to oral birth control frequently, which is going to have a negative impact on bone density. And so the list just goes on and on, where it looks much worse for women than it does for men when it comes to bone health.
Okay, that explains a lot. Well, when we're doing research, and you've already sort of shot this down for good reason, is that I assume awareness was growing around osteoporosis. Why is it not growing, especially with the emphasis on mature health today? Or is it just a demographic segment that's aware of this? But I would just assume people were more aware of osteoporosis and how to control it and what the dangers were. Granted, you don't see it, and I guess a lot of people don't know they have a problem until they break something too.
Well, I think that's part of the issue, is that it's known as the quote unquote silent disease, right? And it's because you're not going to feel osteoporosis. And so if you're asymptomatic, you're not provoked to do some kind of a screening, particularly an early screening. I think one of the great movements that we're seeing right now, and I see a lot of this in my audience, there's a lot of crossover with the influencers in this space, is the big push for education and treatment around menopause. You know, treating menopause not as if it is a natural thing that occurs that you must suffer through, but it is a natural thing that occurs with symptoms that are manageable through lots of different avenues. And so there is a huge push to help women to understand that this is not just something you need to suffer through. Let's actually look at what's going on, and let's talk about the lifestyle, supplemental, potentially pharmacological things that we can do to help you to get through this process and to optimize your health for the really what is the second half of a woman's life.
For men, is it something that they just discard from what you're seeing largely? Think, oh, this is a I don't want to say a woman's issue, but not something I have to worry about because I'm a man, you know?
It is a misconception, although statistically, men are less likely to fall into the osteoporosis range. But statistically, if a man does break a hip, does have a fragility fracture, he is more likely to die, and he is going to have likely a less optimal outcome. None of the outcomes are particularly great usually, but men do worse off, because I think that when a man loses bone fast enough, he is in generally a pretty poor metabolic state to begin with, because he had a longer fall. Right. So not meaning that he's taller physically, but like his health was declining faster for him to actually achieve a state of osteoporosis. So I think those men are generally going to be sicker than their female counterparts. It's definitely worth knowing about. It's worth screening for. It's worth doing early screening for. Because again, I see hormone dysfunction in men going back into their 20s and 30s. So we see low testosterone in men because there are so many endocrine disrupting the things within our society, in our food, in our water. It is hard for men to have optimized testosterone. And then testosterone is this substance which is really looked down upon. If you're considering replacement of testosterone, people start to frown and say, oh, you should not do that because testosterone is dangerous and it's for bodybuilders who want to compete dirty. But that's not the case at all. And we really see this as an issue for men. Not to mention, they also have poor lifestyle choices, which they are doing the same things as their women counterparts from that perspective, which is just trying to do too much.
Mm-hmm. What are some of the symptoms? If you haven't gone in for a test, are there symptoms to say, whoa, I may be dealing with something like this, short of breaking a bone or obviously having it diagnosed? Or is it just something like, as you said, a silent disease?
Yeah, it's really a silent disease. And this is one of the challenges around encouraging people to get screened, is that generally the first symptom is going to be a fracture. And so, you know, you could argue the same thing, though, is true with heart disease, because the first symptom of heart disease, particularly in men, is a fatal heart attack. So we do need to be cognizant as consumers of healthcare information that we really want to focus on prevention, because once you have a hip fracture or a spine fracture, you're never the same. So we really do need to encourage people to look for things other than symptoms, because most people are not going to feel something. Again, some people will say that they feel like their bones are weak or they feel bone pain. Hard to know what they're really feeling. But overall, I would say that people are not going to be symptomatic and that they should get screened if they have any risk factors, which honestly is almost all of us.
Are there any dangers related to poor bone health or osteoporosis that don't involve fractures? But are there ancillary dangers that could lead to something else? And we're not advocating. We just want to let people know this is what could also occur.
Yeah, I would say not really the disease itself, because as you run into issues with bone metabolism, the biggest thing is fracture. There are issues that come along with poor bone metabolism, but you're really going to see these more with pharmacological management. So things like osteonecrosis of the jaw, other dental issues, because the quality of the bone in your jaw is so important when it comes to your teeth. But outside of that, we're really talking about fracture prevention.
You're diagnosed with osteosporosis. What are the treatments that are available? Can it be reversed, or is it a matter of just limiting the damage?
Yeah, this is a really important point. And I think probably the biggest takeaway from our conversation will be to educate people that osteoporosis is reversible as long as you have the capacity to make change. And so there is a population of individuals who maybe they are, I don't want to say too old, but that's kind of what how we would divide them. But people who don't have the capacity to change their diet, to do exercise, to load their bones, to potentially consider hormone replacement for either women or men. If you're beyond that, then pharmacological management might be the only option that you have. But where I see the biggest error in medical management of osteoporosis is our younger individuals. And I'm talking about particularly women, but men and women in their 40s and 50s who get screened early for whatever reason. And then their doctor says, well, the standard of care is to go on a bisphosphonate drug, which is an anti-resorptive drug. It means it poisons the bone breakdown cells, and it will increase your bone mineral density as you go forward in time, and it will reduce fracture risk. But you can only use those drugs in particular for 3 to 5 years, depending on the form of the drug. If you're 50 years old and you're a woman that just went through menopause, what are you going to do when you're 55? So the drug therapy has a lot of potential downsides. There's some risks. And the biggest issue is that it's just myopic in nature. If you have a drug that you can't use for more than 5 or 10 years and you're 50 years old and you're at your essentially middle life, what are you going to do for the rest of the time? And So we know within that population, if you look for the underlying cause of bone loss, you look for the hormone dysfunction, you look for the other potential causes of bone loss and bone metabolism dysfunction, and you address those things, then we see essentially everybody improving their bone health, improving bone mineral density, and reversing osteoporosis. So it is definitely reversible if you have the capacity to do the things that you need to do that.
So you're saying this can be reversed, where you're actually gaining more bone than you're losing and rebuilding it and not just thwarting the loss?
Yeah, and you see that on imaging. So if you look at the DEXA, which is the traditional screening modality that is essentially like an x-ray that gives you the T-score, which is your bone density. If you look at DEXA over time and people that are doing all the things that we train people to do, their bone mineral density will improve. So we see patients that their bone mineral density is down in the -2s, -3s, -4s, and they start to come up. Now it's slow. We see people that are doing 5%, 10% increase in bone mineral density per year, which is great. But even at that pace, it's going to be slow. If your T-score is down in the -4, -3s, it's going to take you a decade, 15 years to get out of osteoporosis. But you can make those improvements and continue to do those things. And the good news is these are the same things that you should be doing from a health optimization longevity perspective. It's building muscle. It's doing resistance training. It's eating the right diet. It's doing all of those things that you're going to want to do anyway for healthy aging. So really, I think that osteoporosis is more just a sign of some kind of underlying dysfunction that you need to address anyway.
What should we really be emphasizing on a personal level versus a hormonal level or treatment level?
So the way that we look at this is that women in particular, men to some extent, but women in particular are going to pretty much be a victim of what they've been told for the last 30 years, which is you're going to be better off if you eat a low-fat, plant-forward diet and reduce saturated fat and cholesterol. Like that's the messaging we've heard for the last 30 years. And what that message does is encourages people to eat a highly processed food diet, avoiding eating protein sources, and they're going to become sarcopenic, which means loss of muscle mass, which then leads to loss of bone mass, or chicken or the egg, hard to know which is which. But either way, we need to flip that upside down. Particularly in a metabolically disadvantaged state, we really need to focus on adequate protein sources as our primary thing. So we need to get our adequate protein source. I'm going to recommend from animal products because that's both my bias, but also just what the literature supports is going to be better absorbed from an amino acid perspective. So we recommend starting out most of our patients at 1 gram per pound of desired body weight. And a lot of our patients are underweight. We have overweight patients too, but we kind of aim for that. What is the desired body weight? So a lot of our women are going to be around a desired body weight of 110, 120, 130 pounds. They tend to be leaner, and we're going to try to aim for that as our protein goal. And that's really hard for them to get. Most women are going to come into this program eating 40 to 50 grams of protein if they're lucky. And so we really need to like double, potentially triple what they're currently eating to have them get enough of the building blocks to build muscle and bone. That's the primary thing. And then we want to make it an anti-inflammatory diet. We want to remove the potential toxins. So you're talking about the added sugar, the highly processed foods, the seed oils, if that's an issue for someone, and get them into eating a whole food diet that is protein forward, anti-inflammatory. That's the basis in broad strokes.
Let's say you really want to have a diagnosis as to whether or not that they're susceptible to osteoporosis or they're suffering from it. But can you go in and insist I get this test?
I mean, kind of, right? So I think to do a little education on your own to understand what your risk factors are would be helpful. And so if you went into your doctor and said, hey, I'm concerned about my bone health. I was reading about risk factors for osteoporosis, and I find that I was vegetarian for 20 years, which is a risk factor, or I had bariatric surgery, which is a risk factor, or I had an eating disorder when I was young, which is a risk factor, or I eliminated dairy and protein. And like you could go down the line, or I've been on a PPI for GERD. There are so many risk factors that if you have one risk factor, then you can go into your doctor and say, hey, I know I'm under 65, but I have this risk factor and I'm worried about my bone health. Would you order me a DEXA? And they should say yes. If they said no, there are other ways to get it. One of the beautiful things about the United States is that we have a sort of rising cash pay system. So there are ways to get it outside of the traditional medical model without a doctor's prescription.
I would suspect, though, as in many of these cases, if your primary care physician isn't going to order it, people probably who need it the most probably have the fewest financial resources to get one of these tests done.
This imaging modality is probably under $300, and in most areas, probably under $100. So it's not like paying for an MRI in cash, like the thousands of dollars. This is something that most people should be able to do.
Okay. All right. And that's good to know, too, what type of cost you may be facing. I know that we can go into a lot of different areas, and this is fascinating as a wake-up call, hopefully, for our listeners. But just to close, what's the biggest misconception facing this?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is that it can be reversed. And so this is the traditional medical model and the story I hear over and over again. And on our YouTube channel, people love leaving comments, and I love our community there. But we hear this story, I mean, thousands and thousands of times. And the story goes like this, which is, I got screened for fill in the blank reason, and I had osteoporosis, and it freaked me out, and I was really scared. And I went to my doctor, and they told me I had to take this drug, and then I told them I wanted to do it on my own, and naturally, and they said, that can't be done, that's impossible, take this drug. And then they pressure them into taking a drug. And then they go home, and they read about the drug, and they get even more scared. And so they come to us with all this fear around fracture, around the drug, around the side effects, and they're freaking out. And then they go on to Facebook and they go on all these, you know, support groups for osteoporosis and hear all this conflicting information, and they're just sitting there with their head spinning. And that is the biggest negative thing we could do for people that are suffering from a diagnosis, anxiety, not necessarily the disease. They're just suffering from the diagnosis of the disease, and they have so much anxiety around what to do, how to do it, who to trust. And so that's why, again, we started the things that we started, because we want to put as much information out there as we can to empower people that a diagnosis of osteoporosis is not the end. It doesn't mean that your life is over. It just means that we need to understand what's going on so that we can make a plan for moving forward with or without drug therapy. The vast majority of our patients don't need drugs, but again, we have a specific subset of the population, but so many people can improve their bone health naturally that they don't need to be pressured into taking a drug.
And for your group, Optimal Human Health, they can get an online consultation. Would they have to come and physically see you, or is it?
So we're all online. We launched this company right at the beginning of the pandemic. And when we did that, nobody wanted to go to the doctor's office. So we didn't start out by building a brick and mortar. And then we followed the telehealth laws that have continued to change and evolve as the pandemic has ended. And there's no compelling reason for us to have a brick and mortar. I would love to be able to see patients in person, but our patient population is pretty evenly distributed throughout the country. So we're represented in all 50 states, and we've just built the telehealth company that way. And that way we can serve so many more people.
Okay, so this is a great way for someone to follow up, have additional questions. So, Dr. Lucas, I want to thank you for all the insights, all the information, and joining us today.
Thank you so much, John. It's been fun. I love talking about these topics. I think it's so important, and I appreciate you getting it out there for people.
Before we move on, we wanted to again encourage listeners to take advantage of the hundreds of exclusive discounts WellWell offers on a range of health and wellness products and services. These cover everything from fitness and athletic equipment to dietary supplements, personal care products, organic foods and beverages, and more. Now, signing up is easy and it's free. Just visit us at wellwellusa.com. Go to Milton's Discounts in the top menu bar, and the sign-up form will appear. Signing up will just take seconds, but the benefits can last for years. Okay, it's clear by now that osteoporosis is a hidden threat, and one that presents devastating, even life-threatening risks in extreme cases. The good news is that there are an increasing number of ways to lower the risk of related injuries and even build up better bone health at any age. Options include prescriptions, but they aren't the only way to battle back on bone health. Lifestyle changes that include increased activities and muscle development are important at any age. Diet is another critical factor, especially making sure everyone gets enough protein in their diet. Then, of course, information and awareness are key, especially for those at particular risk. This means insisting doctors run diagnostic procedures to identify if you're suffering from bone loss before any injury occurs. Remember, osteoporosis is serious business, but it can be dealt with and even reversed. That wraps up this episode of What the Health. We'd like to thank Dr. Doug Lucas of Optimal Bone Health for breaking down the threat osteoporosis presents and the best ways all of us can improve our bone health. If you'd like to learn more about this issue, and we all should, please visit drdouglaslucas.com. That's Dr. as in Dr. DouglasLucas.com. Also look for the Dr. Doug Podcast Show on YouTube. Well, that's it for this episode of What the Health. Thanks for listening in, and we hope you'll join us again. Thanks for listening to this episode of What the Health. Looking for more feel-good news? Just visit our news site at wellwellusa.com and sign up for our weekly news blast. And if you enjoyed this episode and would like to help support our podcast, please share with others, post it on social media, or leave a rating and review. Until next time, keep yourself on that pathway to a healthier, happier you.